Just about as I was leaving my house tonight, I picked up a late news report, which I'll read. It's a news release from the Coalition for Justice in Iraq, and it's announcing a press conference at the United Nations tomorrow, calling for an international tribunal on Iraq to indict those who are responsible for what's happened there. And the principle is, they say, that only through due process and administration of justice can the wounds of three decades of oppression begin to heal. Among the speakers are going to be the mayor of Halabja, which you just heard about, and a former Iraqi general. And that all makes sense. Those who are responsible for the atrocities of the last three decades should certainly be brought to the bar of justice. They name one of them, Saddam Hussein, the tribunal as being, they're calling for a tribunal to indict Saddam Hussein, which is fair enough and would have some moral content if the list of candidates were broadened to include those who've participated with him. And continue to participate with him in bringing about the atrocities. You've already heard about some of them. I won't elaborate. The mayor of Halabja brings to mind the fact that Howard mentioned that at the time of the Halabja atrocities and later atrocities against the Kurds, all of this after the Iran war, the atrocities were being carried out with the support of George Bush and Margaret Thatcher, to mention two who are still alive and kicking, and could easily be brought to trial. The attack on the Kurds in northern Iraq destroyed large agricultural areas, as well as killing plenty of people, probably tens of thousands. That gave the Bush an opportunity to do a favor for a big U.S. agribusiness. He explained to Congress that we have to send extensive credits to Saddam Hussein so he can purchase agribusiness exports. That's a subsidy from U.S. taxpayers to U.S. agribusiness to get them to provide to supply the agricultural needs of Saddam Hussein and his coterie after they had wiped out agricultural areas in Iraq, along with gassing Kurdish citizens and so on. The U.S. also, and Britain, continue to provide, not alone, but they, among others, continue to provide dual-use technology, which could be and indeed was used for development of weapons, including weapons of mass destruction. This continued, in fact, during the invasion of Panama in December 1989, Bush took a little time off to inform Congress that to request from Congress and to obtain a substantial new credits for his friend Saddam Hussein. It's a couple of months before the invasion of Kuwait. Either Anthony or Howard mentioned the visit of senators headed by Bob Dole. That was actually in April 1990, just a couple of months before the invasion of Kuwait. They brought George Bush's greetings. They assured Saddam Hussein that if there was any effort to impose sanctions on him, Bush would veto it. They told him not to be concerned about the criticisms he was hearing. It's just that some people in the media are kind of getting out of control, and the one person on the Voice of America who had dared to criticize Saddam Hussein had been removed. Senator Simpson, who's now the head of the Kennedy School, suggested to Saddam that he invite media people from the United States over to Iraq to see what a nice, benign government it is. This is after two of the three decades of atrocities that the coalition is calling for indictment for correctly. And that continued up until Saddam committed his first crime. The crime, as Howard said, it had nothing to do with invasions. In fact, he was pretty much duplicating what the U.S. had just done a couple of months before in Panama. And the Bush administration, one of the reasons they were so concerned to evade diplomatic efforts, and they did, was as they said. You know, the Chief of Staff Powell, in internal discussion, said the problem is that Saddam may withdraw, leaving a puppet regime in place, at which point everyone in the Arab world will be happy. That's what they expected, and they wanted to prevent. If he had done that, it would have virtually duplicated what the U.S. had just done in Panama, with the one exception that people in Latin America were anything but happy about it. They were bitterly angry. But other than that, it would have been a duplication. So that suggests a couple other people who should be brought before the bar of justice. The general, the former general, suggests others. I don't know which general he is. They didn't say, but you know, maybe he was one of the rebelling Iraqi generals from March 1991. That's after the Iraq slaughter, misnamed war, when there was a rebellion in the South, Shiite rebellion, and the United States, of course, had total command of the air and everything else at that point. The rebelling Iraqi generals requested from the United States, from General Schwarzkopf, they wanted to obtain, they didn't want help, but they wanted access to captured Iraqi arms that they could use in their effort to overthrow the tyrant and carry out a popular revolution. That was refused. They were not permitted access to arms. Saddam Hussein was authorized to use military gunships to attack the rebels. General Schwarzkopf later said that he was snookered by Saddam Hussein. He didn't realize that if he authorized helicopters, they might actually be used to bomb the people who were rebelling. The rebellion was crushed. Basra was devastated. So were other areas. And the Bush administration was pretty frank about the reasons. Remember, this is March 1991, after the so-called war. They simply preferred what they called an iron-fisted Iraqi junta to the threat of a popular revolution, and therefore had to, in the name of what's called stability, had to support these major atrocities in which very possibly as many or more civilians were killed than even were killed during the bombing the month earlier. So that suggests more people who could be introduced into the indictment, George Bush and everyone around him, and those in the press who were most of the commentators who approved of this and explained why this had to be done. There's more. Just last week, another example came along, was reported in the British press. I'll read it. It was obtained by a George Washington University professor who gave the information, or the British press took the information. The document is from the Defense Intelligence Agency. It was presented internally to the government. It was just declassified. It was presented the day after the bombing began. The document is called Iraq Water Treatment Vulnerability. Okay, and the document describes how, it's an intelligence report, how Iraq had established over the years, it had a difficult water problem, but it had developed a sophisticated system for providing and treating water, which was now reaching most of the people in the country with clean, potable water. But it was a complicated system, and it therefore could be destroyed, leading to a catastrophe. And the document says, full degradation of the water system probably will take at least 6 months. Full degradation of the water system will take at least another 6 months. They had just had one day at it. Well, they didn't get 6 months, but they got 6 weeks. I don't know if they came reached full degradation of the water system, but certainly a lot of it, as planned. The bombers destroyed dams, water supply stations, sewage stations, pumping stations, electrical system. All of that amounts to biological warfare. You can simply ask yourself what would happen if something comparable was done, say, in Boston. People would be dying like flies from disease and starvation and so on. That's That is use of weapons of mass destruction. It's biological warfare with exactly the catastrophic effect that they predicted. The professor who released this to the press, only published so far in Britain, suggested, not implausibly, that that might be grounds for a trial for conspiracy to commit genocide. Well, that's Bush, and the implementation of it is Clinton, which suggests more people who might be brought before the bar of justice. Actually, that's been proposed by people who know what they're talking about. Dennis Halliday, who was the first, as I'm sure you know, the first humanitarian administrator of the UN Oil for Food program, resigned in protest, as did his successor. He has just recently called for a criminal trial for Clinton on two charges. One, what he calls genocide. Another, what Howard mentioned, illegal use of force, that is the bombing that is being carried out. It's without any authorization from the Security Council. In fact, the December 1998 bombing was carried out not only in violation, it was carried out in contempt of the Security Council. The bombing was actually timed so that it began, the U.S.-British bombing. The bombing took place just as the Security Council was meeting in an emergency session to deal with the question of Iraq. It was a very clear and explicit gesture of contempt. That's a war crime in itself and only one of many. One of the effects, the intended and effect of the bombing, which was of course achieved, was to undercut any possibility that arms inspectors would be permitted in. That was predicted and it's the consequence. The arms mission had already been very severely compromised by the fact that, as had recently been exposed, it was being used by the United States for intelligence purposes, was being subverted under the cover of an arms inspection mission, which alone was enough to pretty well ensure that it would not be permitted. So that suggests further charges that might be added to the list. And in fact, it's not very difficult to go on, I'm afraid. So as far as this tribunal that's being called tomorrow is concerned, if it is indeed a calling for, if it were, it is not calling for a tribunal to indict those responsible for the last 30 years of atrocities in Iraq, there'd be a fair number of candidates. If it doesn't do that, it's not a coalition for justice in Iraq, it's a coalition for victors justice in Iraq. And that's true of all the human rights groups who are participating in it and so on. And there should be no illusions about it. Well, why are the sanctions being continued? Everybody knows what the consequences are. They're attacking the population and destroying the population and devastating the society and strengthening Saddam and his circle. So why are they being continued? Well, there are two reasons which are repeated over and over again, essentially without comment, and might as well pay attention to them. The first, repeated passionately by Madeleine Albright, Tony Blair, other dignitaries, just to be ecumenical, I'll go to the continent. The last statement of it I've seen just a couple of months ago was by the head of the Sanctions Committee, happens to be Dutch, at the UN Security Council, Peter van Walsum, and he gave the usual line, which reads like this. He said that Iraq, he said, is unique, is in a league of its own. It's the only country that has actually used weapons of mass destruction against an enemy and even against its own people. Well, it's not exactly true. You can think of another country that's used weapons of mass destruction, but putting that aside, it's partly true, but there are words missing. Namely, what we've all been talking about. Yes, Iraq used weapons of mass destruction against an enemy and against its own people with our support, in fact, with our enthusiastic and decisive support. I've seen that argument given over and over, I don't know how many dozen times, and repeated in the press, with never a comment on the missing words, which takes a certain degree of discipline. You have to respect it. In addition to the fact that those missing words and the fact that there are other countries that have used weapons of mass destruction, there's another observation, highly relevant here. Actually, it was made by two hawkish military analysts writing in the journal Foreign Affairs, you know, the premier establishment foreign affairs journal. They pointed out that the sanctions against Iraq have killed more people than all weapons of mass destruction in all of human history put together. They didn't say that in criticism. In fact, they added that it was necessary to do this. But if one is concerned with weapons of mass destruction, yes, they've been used. We've been using them for the past 10 years. It is a form of biological warfare, quite apart from the bombing and its consequences. And that is, as they said, has killed many more people, in fact, than all weapons of mass destruction in history. Well, there's a second argument that's given. The second argument is that Saddam Hussein could terminate this regime anytime he wanted, so therefore he's responsible. And that's true. He could terminate it by committing suicide, for example. The arrangements have been set up so that there's no other way for him to terminate it. I try to think it through. Imagine you're Saddam Hussein. How could you terminate the sanctions? Well, if you consider the position that the United States has taken very explicitly, there's one way. He can commit suicide. So, yes, he could terminate the sanctions. Therefore, he's responsible. He certainly is a brutal tyrant and a mass murderer, just as he was when the U.S. was openly supporting him. In fact, his major crimes, by far the overwhelming majority of his crimes, were committed during this period when he was a friend and ally, but he could terminate them. So therefore, he's responsible for them. So therefore, we have to continue. That's the argument. The logic is intriguing. Since Saddam is in fact taking actions which are crushing his population and destroying the country, therefore we have to join and make sure that they work. That's the logic. And that also passes without comment, at least I can't find any comment. I haven't been able to find any other arguments. Those are the two arguments that are presented. They're never criticized. It's an illustration of the astonishing discipline of the educated classes that they can repeat this over and over again without commenting on the significance of those arguments, which hardly needs comment. That's enough to tell us that something else is involved, not this. Nothing that's being talked about can have anything to do with what's going on. Well, what is going on? Well, you can think about it, but one thing you can be certain of is that it has to do with the oil regime. The only reason for U.S. concern for things that happen in that region is that it happens to have the largest energy reserves in the world, and in the future those reserves will be even more important than they are now if current projections are anywhere near accurate. Iraq is the second largest oil producer in the world, or potentially the second largest reserves in the world after Saudi Arabia. It's a certainty that the U.S. is not going to allow that source of energy to get out of its hands. There's right now lots of criticism about the French and the Russians for interfering with what's called breaking the UN sanctions. That actually means interfering with unilateral U.S. decisions about how the sanctions should be applied. And they are doing that, indeed. There's another way of looking at the same fact, and that is to say that the U.S. and Britain insist on a form of unilateral sanctions which the rest of the U.N. doesn't. There's something that lies behind that, something transparent. Right at the moment, France and Russia have the inside track on exploiting Iraqi oil. The U.S. and British corporations don't. They're excluded for the obvious reasons I don't have to go into, but too obvious to comment on. And as long as that remains the case, you can be pretty certain that that Iraq will not be permitted back into the civilized world. There is, in fact, a way in which Saddam could re-enter the system, be allowed back into the system, apart from committing suicide, kick out the French and Russian and Chinese and other oil companies, and allow the U.S. and British companies to take it over again. When that happens, Iraq will be brought back into the family of nations, unless actions that are taken by the American people, and it's primarily their responsibility, decisive and effective and powerful actions will reverse the course of the atrocities and terminate them, whether there's a legitimate tribunal to indict those responsible or not.
Thank you, Dr. Chomsky.